Now let's go to my final slide just to summarize what I've been talking about. What I've tried to do here, because I don't have many photographs of dangerous ice, I tried to look at the ice and the dangerous ice, some dangerous ice questions from a more scientific point of view. How can we explain some dangerous ice situations based on what we know from scientific studies? And this final slide is a way perhaps to summarize some of the things I've been talking about and how dangerous ice conditions happen. And I think we can break down dangerous ice conditions and the creation of dangerous ice conditions into two primary causes. That would be thermal causes or mechanical causes. By thermal, I mean we would be talking about melting or refreezing of the ice. And of course, that's primarily dictated by the air temperature or the snow cover. And as we've seen, we can melt the ice on a river if you have a power plant dumping warm water into the ice cover, into the river, melt the ice cover. But as I also mentioned, you don't have to have a power plant to melt the river ice cover in the winter. That if you have a constriction in the river where the flow of water increases, the velocity of the water flow increases, then you can also melt the ice that way. And that would be a combination of thermal and mechanical effects. The snow cover retards or slows down the rate of freezing on the bottom of the ice cover. On the other hand, if you get sufficient snow, sufficient massive snow on the surface of the ice, then it becomes a more constructive process where you get flooding of the bottom of the snow on the ice surface, overflow, as it's often called, and that overflow and the slush can refreeze, and you can actually build up the ice cover by adding ice at the top rather than the bottom. And thermal effects on the ice also include the expansion and contraction of the ice in response to rising and falling air temperatures. This leads to thermal stress in the ice, and it can lead to fracturing also. Mechanical stresses would include the wind. That's probably more likely to affect ice on a lake, and particularly during freeze-up when the ice is thin. Water flow on a river, again, that might have the biggest effect during the freeze-up period, but it can also affect the ice during any time in the winter. We've all heard about ice jams on rivers in the interior. These can happen at almost any time between the fall and the spring. And ice jams will raise the level of the water in the river because they basically act as a dam. And this can cause flooding outside the river channel and flooding over the top of the river ice also. The snow load on river ice can have the same effect as the snow load on lake ice and cause fracturing and flooding and overflow. And then a final mechanical influence on ice covers and certainly create a dangerous ice condition. It's a rather extreme one, but one that is a very recent event that we're all familiar with in Alaska. And that is the Denali Fault earthquake of the 3rd of November 2002, when we had a magnitude 7.9 earthquake, which was particularly felt in interior Alaska. The Denali Fault runs through the Alaska Range, and it runs right through the village of Mentasta Lake, which is close to the Tok Cutoff Road, about 50 miles southwest of Tok. It's an Athabascan, I may be wrong there, it's a native village at Mentasta Lake. And the fault also goes right underneath Mentasta Lake itself. And in early November 2002, there was a thin ice cover on the lake. It was about 20, 30 centimeters thick, I'm told, by a teacher at Mentasta School that I'm working with. What happened when the fault ruptured and the earthquake occurred is it basically shook the water in Mentasta Lake and caused what we call a seiche or a seiche, S-E-I-C-H-E. Basically, that's a violent water motion in a water body like a lake, where the water basically begins to move horizontally and move towards one end of a lake. It will be reflected back towards the lake, middle of the lake, and it will cause, there will be resonance caused, because as the first water is reflected off the edge of the lake, there is still water moving in the opposite direction towards the edge of the lake. These water masses moving in the opposite direction will collide, call resonant motions, which lead to more violent motions in the water column. This is a seiche. In this case, we had a seiche occurring in an ice-covered lake, and the violent water motion basically shook the ice cover to pieces. And the teacher in Mentasta who described this to me, she had spoken with locals who observed the effects on the ice cover. They watched what happened, that the ice was broken up into many pieces. It was thrust out towards the shores of the lake and thrust up onto the shores for many meters, leaving the central part of the lake open, with an enormous amount of vegetation and debris on the water surface, and this is material that had been picked up off the bottom of the lake and thrown up to the surface. And in the lower right corner of the slide, there are two small sub-scenes from RadarSat synthetic aperture radar images showing Mentasta Lake before and after the earthquake and the occurrence of this seiche. We didn't plan the acquisition of these radar image scenes, that we were lucky that they had been planned for other purposes, but in the left-hand panel you can see Mentasta Lake is shown by the generally dark, almost black area. That is the thin new ice on the lake, reflecting much of the radar signal away from the radar antenna in space. So there's very little signal going back to the radar in space, so the ice cover looks very dark. On the 12th of November, 9 days after the earthquake, the panel on the right shows a very different picture, that you can no longer see the outline of Mentasta Lake very well. The shores around much of the margin of the lake are very obscure, and that's because the ice was thrust up onto the shores, obscuring that boundary between smooth ice and rough land, and so we no longer see the edges of the lake so clearly. And we also see that the generally dark character of the ice as it was on the 26th of October is now a rather grayer, lighter tone, and that's because the ice on the surface of the lake now is rather rough because of the effects of the earthquake, breaking the ice up into a very blocky, rough surface, which causes a much stronger signal to go back to the radar antenna in space, so it looks grayer in the radar images. So we were very fortunate to capture the consequences of the earthquake on the ice cover on Mentasta Lake before and after the earthquake, and obviously creating very dangerous ice conditions, very extreme ice conditions, which fortunately we wouldn't meet very often in the interior, but it does show what can happen when we have extreme events occur in interior Alaska. Very unlike the overflow or the opening and closing of the ice covers on rivers and lakes by warming and cooling and so on, but a rather interesting example of dangerous ice.
Thank you very much.